Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, it's Friday. Chuck and Julie are taking the day off. Good for them. Hope they get to relax today and everything. You know, this is your guest host, Mark Poff, again, retired detective here in Colorado, was a cop for 17 years, but I don't have any cop talk to do today. John got stuck. I think he's working on a case. He's been busy all week. I've been busy all week. Well, I went to Vegas, so I really wasn't busy. I was too busy losing money. But we're going to talk about a whole bunch of things today, and we'll see if we can get anyone to join in. I think a lot of people probably on Fridays are already looking forward to the weekend. I know I am, except I'm working most of the weekend. But want to go through some things that happened in the media today and stuff, and news announcements and stuff with the Supreme Court, and then talking about the debate. Unbelievable. And if you want to call in, if you're watching on Facebook and you want to call in, call 888-627-6008. Feel free to do that. If you're watching here on Zoom, just unmute and start talking. We can talk about whatever you want. I was, you know, I was expecting, like they always say, a pretty low bar for Joe Biden last night, but he definitely did not make that bar. If anything, he tripped over the bar numerous times. I was like shocked, to be honest with you, everything that happened in the debate last night. But we'll get to that here in a few minutes. I want to talk about some other things first, and then maybe some other people will join, and we'll see how that goes when talking about the debate. I have some insight as just what I consider myself to be an average conservative here in Colorado. I'm not, you know, I don't have any great insight into politics. I was in politics for 12 years. I was on a school board. Maybe I'll talk about that a little bit. It was kind of interesting being on a school board, having to run for multiple elections and how things changed in those elections over the years. You know, when I first actually, might as well talk about it. When I first got on the school board, I was actually appointed. And I think the reason the school board wanted me on, the other members, was because I was a detective with the local sheriff's office and could provide some insight into that whole avenue of law enforcement, safety of the schools and everything. And I think they all saw that I was someone that could work with everybody. I was kind of low key and ended up being on the school board for 12 years here at Lewis Palmer in Monument, Colorado. I think one of the best school districts in the state of Colorado. Still, typically we're always ranked in the top 10%. My kids went through, did great, went through, screamed through college, doing great now in their careers and such. But so when I was first appointed, and then 2 years later, I had to run for the seat, and I did unopposed. So that was great. Nothing better than running unopposed, except you really don't have any challenges, and there's really not much of an accomplishment when you kind of get this participation trophy and you're on the board again. So I served another 2 years. Then I ran and somebody ran against me. And that was kind of interesting in running because it's a nonpartisan election. Everybody knew I was a Republican. And some of the Republicans actually got a little upset that most of the Democrats were supporting me. And they're like, well, we can't like him then, you know, if the Democrats, you know, and the independents are supporting him. And I was kind of like, don't I want to win the support of everybody? So I was kind of in that next term, everybody kind of loved me term, won pretty handily. And then a lot changed and some people came after me. So the last time I ran a little closer margin, but I won, you know, election three times. So that was kind of cool. And having to play the games into politics, but I don't think I could play in politics right now with all the garbage that goes on, accusatorial. You know, my last term on the school board, I was accused by another board member. Actually, the whole board was accused. The rest of the board, one member who resigned, accused the rest of the board of emotionally gang raping her. And I took great offense to that. And they even went to a judge to try to get some meeting minutes. You know, we went into executive session and they wanted all that brought out. And the judge reviewed all the minutes and said, or reviewed the video, the audio, and said that we didn't do anything wrong. And so none of that came out. It was just crazy. And I don't think I'd ever want to get into it again, but it was fun. It's great doing stuff for the kids and all that stuff. So I love that part of being on a school board. So one of the things I thought was interesting, the last couple times I've been on the show, I've talked about Scottie Scheffler and all the stuff that, you know, happened in Louisville. Well, it appears the Louisville chief of police resigned in disgrace. She resigned, I guess, in the last day or two over the Scottie Scheffler and some allegations of inappropriate, not sex abuse, but it was some other things that was going on in the police department that she wasn't handling right. And so they kind of forced her out to resign. So I thought that was kind of interesting that she resigned in Louisville. And one of the things I thought was really interesting this week, when we talk about illegal immigration, and of course, you're not supposed to say illegal immigration. I'll say it. They're breaking the law when they cross the border. It is some of these states, these ones that are sanctuary states, sanctuary cities, they're now realizing that this is not sustainable, that they can't do it. And so they're trying to quietly deal with this situation, and they're not doing real well on being quiet about this. So Massachusetts now has had enough. And the governor actually sent five officials down to Texas to the border area, and they're talking to migrants, illegal aliens, and they're telling them, hey, you know, it's great that you have chosen to, you know, violate our borders and illegally cross our border. We embrace you as a sanctuary state, but don't come to Massachusetts. So they've actually sent, on the taxpayer's dime, five officials. The governor sent five officials down to Texas, to the border area, and are persuading these illegal immigrants to not come to Massachusetts. So what good is it to be a sanctuary state or say that you're a sanctuary state if you're going to attempt to discourage people not to come to our state, don't come to Massachusetts? So I find that interesting, and I wonder how many other states are quietly doing the same thing, sending people down, you know. And the Biden administration, they were actually trying to send people to the states where they wanted. Of course, they wanted them to go into Texas. So they were sending them to Florida and other states like that. And then they get upset and make a big deal when Texas and Florida start sending them north to some of these blue states. Well, it's interesting that Massachusetts is now going down and dissuading. I think that's the actual term that they used to convince them, hey, it's great that you came into our country illegal, but just don't come to Massachusetts. And she just announced, the governor announced today, or the mayor of Boston, I can't remember which one it was, announced that you can't stay in the airport. I guess some migrants were actually going to, illegal aliens, were going to Logan Airport and using it like as a shelter. So just imagine when you have to go to the airport, that you have to go through baggage claim or whatever, and you have to climb over people sleeping. I mean, it's just incredibly bad that they're doing this kind of stuff. But now they realize this is not sustainable. You know, we can't do this. And this actually came up in the debate last night about how we're ruining our country by just opening the borders and everything up like that. So I was really hoping, though, that, you know, I always like, if I'm going to watch politics and stuff, it might as well be entertaining. If things aren't going to go my way, it might as well be entertaining. I thought it was interesting that the House was thinking about voting, which I don't think would have passed, to send the sergeant at arms to go arrest Attorney General Garland. I think that would have just been hilarious if you could have just watched that whole scenario. So you have the guy who's running the Justice Department, and you send over a guy or a person, the sergeant at arms for the house, with an arrest warrant that's issued by whom? Who signs it? Is it signed by a judge? Is it signed by the Speaker of the House? You know, how's that authority work? How does all this play out? I think it would have been so entertaining. It would have been almost like the O.J. Simpson scenario where he's driving around in his white Bronco. I would have loved to have seen this. You know, we had drones and everything. And, you know, they make this big announcement that they're going to be, you know, they just passed this. The warrant's been signed. And Sergeant at Arms has the warrant. And he shows it. And, you know, and then he walks out into his caravan of vehicles or whatever, drives over to the Justice Department and tries to get in. You know, it says, I need to see AG, you know, the Attorney General Garland. I have an arrest warrant to take him to Congress. How would that have played out? That would have been hilarious to watch that whole thing play out as they're driving from the Capitol building all the way down to the Justice Department to try to execute this warrant, which I'm not sure how that would play out. I'm sure Garland has security around him. You know, it would have been entertaining to see how that would have played out. It's not going to happen. I mean, I don't think it's going to come up to a vote. I don't think anything like that. I don't think they would get the votes anyway, but it would have been fun to watch. So actually today, we're so focused on the debate from last night that, you know, this morning I'm trying to get some work done and stuff, and I really did not get much accomplished today. It was so much going on that the Supreme Court, you know, handed down some rulings, and it's not even the one about immunity, which I think is a very important one because obviously the president of the United States has immunity. You know, that's not in question, but they're trying to do stuff that to say that he doesn't have immunity, which is absurd. But the Supreme Court handed down a ruling today that I thought was really interesting because I've kind of seen some of this in my business and in working with others that I know about these fishermen up in the New England. So the premise from a lot of this is you have these different agencies, bureaucracies, bureaucrats that are creating regulations without law. So what they do is Congress will pass some type of law, and then it's up to the agencies to define them or to interpret them any way they think is reasonable and do whatever they want, which is not reasonable. And so NOAA, the National Ocean and Atmospheric Association, decided that it's that some law gave them the right to regulate fishing. And so in New England, originally they were putting monitors on every fishing boat to make sure they did it right or didn't violate anything. At first, it was paid for by the government. And then my understanding is later on, they said, you know, we can't sustain this. So let's bill them. So think about this. This is, you know, almost a tax basically on fishing boats, that they have to pay for a monitor, a person to sit on their boat, their fishing boat all day when they go out, and it could be days at a time. And if it's days, you got to house them on your boat. So there's another crew person you can't have because a bunk has to be given up to this monitor. So you have to feed them and you have to pay $700 a day. Well, a smaller boat, a family owned boat, $700 a day. What if they go out for 3 days and they don't catch any fish? You know, that's damaging enough to this small business, but then to put out $2,100, $700 a day to pay for this government agent who's on your boat. And there's no law that says that that's supposed to happen. That's an interpretation or regulation caused by an agency with no law passed in Congress to back that up. And this has been going on for years, and I could give you tons of examples of where this takes place. And so today the Supreme Court ruled for the fishing industry, the fisheries or what, not fisheries, but these small fishing boats. So they rule in their favor. And so what's going to happen? Are these monitors going to start? I mean, I can see a boat at sea and saying, you know what, you need to get off my boat. Now, you know, the Supreme Court overruled this. Well, we're not at the dock. Well, you need to get off my boat. You know, I can see, you know, are they going to throw these monitors off? You know, so I don't know how this is going to play out because, you know, the Supreme Court can't enforce anything. So do these small fishing boats kick them out? Large fishing boats don't care. A large corporation, it means nothing to them. You know, $700 a day when they already have a crew of 30 or 40 on this huge fishing boat out in the Atlantic, you know, with huge nets or Pacific or whatever, they don't care. Look, big business loves regulations because it drives the competition out. So the thing that keeps prices down for like, you know, fish, beef, chicken, whatever, is your small family farms, ranches, and fishermen. So regulation destroys them. You go to big business, they get monopolies, and prices go up. And, you know, Walmart doesn't care about regulations. It means nothing to them. They're making millions a day. But a small ma and pa store, a regulation could destroy them. And the government doesn't care because they, especially the Democrats, because they want a socialist government. They want everyone relying on the government. So they want to regulate small business to death. I can give you one example for me, that something that I went through. And it wasn't a big deal, but it was just a nuisance. So when I retired from law enforcement about 10 years ago, I knew I was going to go into consulting and do computer forensics and different things like that, cell phone forensics, all kinds of stuff. The state of Colorado came out right about the time that I retired, came out with a regulation. And I don't really know where this regulation came from. Department of Regulatory something in the state of Colorado that said that private investigators had to be licensed by the state. Well, I didn't even know if this was really something that wanted, you know, I don't know that I really wanted to do private investigations, but because I was consulting with defense attorneys and there was an opportunity or a chance that I might want to talk to a witness or to the suspect, the defendant, the client, I needed to be licensed just to make sure there was no issues. So I had to take a test, which wasn't an issue. And originally they said they wanted about, I think it was like between $200 and $300 a year for this. And I was like, yeah, okay, it's not going to break me. But where's that, you know, where's this $200-$300 going to go? What is it going to do? What, you know, what's this going to support? What is this, you know, why, you know? And then there was this huge uproar and it went down to like $40 a year. But every year I had to register for this. Every year they sent me a new thing that I had to have on my person. And it was just a pain in the butt. Not a big deal, but it's just another regulation. And I had to be bonded. So I had to get a bond every year that cost me $100. Okay, not going to break me. But again, it's just the beginning of regulations. Now, I decided to get into cattle. So I had a partner out east, and we started getting into cattle. Well, he had thousands of head of cattle. And one time I came out there and they were digging this big pond, you know, just south of his feedlot. And I was like, Chuck, what are you, I guess I shouldn't say Chuck, but Chuck, what are you doing, buddy? Why are you digging? He goes, well, the EPA and there was another group that came in and said that he had to have a retention pond. I said, really? Who's paying for this? He goes, well, they say they're going to pay half. Okay, so they gave him the design. They gave him what he had to do, what the requirements were for this huge retention pond. So the water that naturally ran off from his feedlot would go into this retention pond, and then they would have to pump it out and all kinds of stuff. But this was regulated basically by EPA and some local, like I almost want to say it wasn't FDA, USDA or something was involved. So he ended up spending a few $100,000 on this retention pond. And then he said, okay, you guys said you were going to pay half. And they came back and they said, oh, we're not paying for this, this, and this. You know, we didn't, that's not part of the requirement. And he goes, I built it to your specifications. You told me to put this in. So you told me to do this. And they said, well, we're not paying for that. So they ended up only paying about 20% of his retention pond. And it costs hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, what about a small rancher? Small rancher couldn't do that. Well, there's no way if you had, you know, you're just not going to make that kind of money that real quick. So if you're up and starting rancher and you have to have this multi-hundred thousand dollar retention pond, if you want to get into feedlots and stuff, I mean, it's just not sustainable, again, to use that word over and over again. So again, this is the way the government drives out small business. Large feedlots, corporate-owned feedlots, and they're everywhere. There's a bunch here in Colorado. They're out in the middle of nowhere, and they are owned by corporations, and they have thousands of head of cattle. They employ, maybe that's the good part, they employ probably 20, 30 cowboys that are doing this, and they're big, huge operations where these cows are not out grazing on grass. They're stuck in these feedlots. They feed them every day. And then when they reach a certain point, they take them to Tyson or whatever to be butchered. And that's their business. So be it. I'm okay with that. Pigs, chickens, they all do it. But when you do these regulations, it drives the little competitors out, which is the bread and butter. And we felt this during COVID. So during COVID, you had these large, what they call packing plants, their slaughterhouses, that basically shut down because of COVID. And we couldn't get products. You know, we all know what we went through and stuff. But small little package plants, maybe employing 20, 30 people and butchering maybe 30 to 50 head of cattle a day, or so many pigs or chickens or whatever. If you had a bunch of these little plants, if one shut down, the impact's a lot less. So we realized, you know, when we talk about the supply chain issues, these regulations are killing us. We realized also about computer chips, drugs, and they all said, remember towards the end of COVID, they all said, we need to get away from this. We need to bring the chips back. We need to get all the precursors to drugs that we need and everything. We can't be reliant on China. We all said this. Have we done anything? Are we still reliant on China? Are we still reliant on foreign countries for chips? I think the answer is yes. And we haven't learned anything. Now, the problem is that Trump left right at the in the middle of COVID. I think Trump would have dealt with this. I think Trump would have brought these businesses back and encouraged them through incentives or whatever, because Trump's a business person. I think he would have dealt with this, because one of the things you definitely can say about Trump, whether you like him or hate him or whatever, if Trump tells you he's going to do something, he's going to try as best he can to do it. Now, I just saw a rally of his just before this Zoom, before the podcast, where he said no taxes on tips. And I'm sitting there going, how in the hell are you going to pull that one off? And I started thinking, you know, if there's anybody can do it, Trump can do it. No taxes on tips. I personally think we should get rid of tips. Tips have gotten out of control. We're tipping for everything. I just got back from Vegas. My goodness, I was tipping everything. You get the little thing, it already has the tip. And it's like, okay, what are you going to give me starting at 18%? 18%. This was the stuff during COVID, you know, where we were trying to give them a bonus during COVID for, you know, thanking them for coming out and working, you know, to feed us and other things. COVID's over. You know, when did the baseline for tips get to 18%? I remember 15 being a hell of a good tip. Now 18 is the minimum. You know, when you look at the thing, there's no 10%. Got to get away from tips. Tips are a nightmare. We need to pay waitresses hourly wages that make sense, that are reasonable, and knock the tips off. And then if somebody wants to drop a $5 bill on the table, that's their God-given right to do that. But it shouldn't be an automatic, oh, no, you're going to tip me 18%. Well, maybe I'm not. You know, when did we ever reach this point that tips were basically considered included? I mean, so that's kind of crazy. So these whole regulation things. So when I hear Donald Trump, and I think I've been clear on this before, I'm not a big fan of Trump. I'm a very conservative Republican. I like Trump, voted for Trump. I have no problem saying I voted for Trump, but I'm kind of in the middle. You know, most people either love Trump or they hate Trump, and there's no middle ground. I'm one of those few people in the middle ground. Sometimes he drives me crazy with what he says, but I love his policies and I love what's going on. And I have to tell you, I think after his first 4 years, I think he got a clue. I think when he got in there, some of these, you know, the swamp kind of played him a little bit. And then he started firing all these people. I thought it was great last night when Trump said, "Biden, have you fired anybody?" You know, it's like the way you have a great company is you fire people. And I hate to say that, but you get rid of the dead wood. And then the other people that are mediocre are like, whoa, they're firing people. That's not good. I better perform a little better. So that's how you get the best out of people is you fire the incompetent people. My God, Biden's whole administration is incompetent. He should fire them all. So I am more motivated by Trump today than I've ever been from the standpoint of Biden's an idiot. You know, we can't take, I guarantee you one thing. I'm going to make a promise right here, and I know I can live up to it. Biden will not be our president for the next 4 years. I'm willing to bet dinner for anybody to that effect. Even if he does get reelected, he will not be our president in 4 years. Guarantee it. It's not going to happen. So it is what it is. But so moving on. So they also ruled today on the thing about obstruction of an official proceeding. This is something that the Attorney General Garland and his organization was charging everybody on January 6th, or a lot of people on January 6th, to get big felonies. And let me tell you, I've seen this in my career, first in law enforcement and now as a consultant working predominantly for defense attorneys. District attorneys, attorney generals, they overcharge. They stretch it. We saw this with Trump and you know, where they're charging these crazy statutes that it's like, I don't even think that applies. Well, so one of the things they did was, is they said, hey, you were obstructing an official proceeding. Well, no, they weren't. You know, I remember seeing video of one guy who happened to walk into the Capitol. He walked up to one of the Capitol Police people. And I guess the guy told him, yeah, you guys aren't actually supposed to be in here. But nobody's really telling him. I find that interesting that these people that are walking through the doors into the Capitol and right there are Capitol Police, none of them are yelling out, you know, you're trespassing. You're trespassing. You need to leave. It's like, hey, come on in. Party's in here. Come on in. Like it's no big deal. Well, he walks up to a Capitol Police officer, and he kind of gets the feeling, yeah, I don't have a warm fuzzy about this, and walks right back out. And they charged him with all kinds of stuff. The guy literally was in the Capitol building for like 30 seconds. And it's ridiculous. So the Supreme Court ruled actually in their favor that, yes, you're stretching this law. This is not what this law and was intended for. And I guess one of the justices said, so somebody yells out during a proceeding. They're up in the, let's say they're up in the gallery and they yell out. Could you charge him with this? You know, are they obstructing an official proceeding by yelling? You know, that's not what the intention of this was for. And so they ruled in favor of this guy. Not going to change a whole bunch. The whole thing with January 6th is such a cluster. You know, they should review it. If somebody went into the Capitol and walked out, charge them with trespass, give them a $50 fine and be done with it, move on. I mean, the whole thing was just, it's just a joke after especially watching all these huge riots that cost billions of dollars worth of damage, and no one got charged with anything. And then just here recently up in Manhattan, I guess at Columbia University or something else, these protesters went into a building, caused all kinds of damage, kidnapped people, or at least what they refer to as false imprisonment, wouldn't let them leave. And then the police go in and arrest all these people after a day or so, and they drop the charges against these protesters, the rioters, not protest, rioters. You know, I've always said, whenever I've been on this show, all I care about is equal enforcement of the law. I don't care who you are, but you've got to be fair and equal to everybody. And the system right now is completely out of whack. It's crazy. So, hey, I want to spend the last 15 minutes or so talking about the debate. If there's anybody who happens, I see a couple people. If you want to chime in, go for it. Again, if you want to call in, 888-627-6008. No big deal. I realize it's a Friday. I'm just trying to fill in and stuff. I found as what I consider to be an average conservative Republican, I was bombshelled. So I'm sitting here in my family room, leaning back, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to watch this debate. I thought it'd be kind of interesting, hour and a half. What's the big deal? Just chilling, eating a little Whataburger, which is overpriced. And the debate starts. And I see Biden walk up to the podium. They introduce him and he walks up to the podium. It was game over before Biden ever reached the podium. He looked like Mr. Magoo trying to walk to that podium. It's like 30 feet was a challenge for him. And then Biden struts in, goes up to his podium, like, let's play ball. And I was like, this is not a fair fight at all. So whatever drugs they gave Biden to hype him up on to get through this debate, they gave them to him too soon because they wore off. Right at the beginning, Biden started doing this quick talking thing. Like he knew what was, I mean, he's just like, and I'm like, what on earth are you doing? It wasn't fluid. It was like just a machine gun of talk. I was just like, dude, this guy's hyped up on something. And it didn't make a lot of sense. And I was all, you know, I was joking on Wednesday about, you know, every time he freezes or screws up or whatever to take a drink, you'd be trashed in 30 minutes if you'd have done that last night. Biden was screwing up everywhere, which I'm sure everybody saw. But what I thought was, here's some of the interesting points that I got out of this. I've been thinking all along about this whole abortion issue. Republicans are just letting the Democrats control the narrative on abortion. This is not something that the Republicans need to run from. And I don't run from it. It's like, let's have a conversation. Nobody, no one that I've heard yet has said anything about banning abortions. Nobody. That, I mean, they use the word a lot. You know, we want to ban abortions after 6 weeks. That's not a ban. A ban on abortion would be no abortions, zero, none. And some of you may agree with no abortions. And I have to tell you, as a man of faith, I just kind of think this. If a 14-year-old girl who was raped by her stepdad could have an opportunity to talk to Jesus and say, you know, she's pregnant, and she said to Jesus, hey, my stepdad raped me and I'm pregnant and I'm 14. Jesus, what do you think I should do? Do you think Jesus would ever say, well, you need to rush off to an abortion clinic as quickly as possible? I just don't see Jesus saying that. So from a man of faith, that's what motivates me. But getting back to the reality of the abortion issue, Donald Trump handled it great, I thought. He embraced the subject. He knew it was coming. You knew the subject. I mean, the question's coming. So be ready for it. And he answered it exactly the way I would have answered it. Look, no one threw out abortions. The Supreme Court did not throw out abortions. All they said was it's not guaranteed in the Constitution. It's a state rights issue. And federal government, if you want to regulate abortions, pass a law. It's not guaranteed in the Constitution, which it's not. It's there's nothing even close, you know, to anything close to anything like that in the Constitution. It's states' rights. And that's how this whole country was founded, was on state rights. And if the federal government wants to step in, they can. And Trump made it clear, I thought last night, he's not even interested in a federal statute. Well, Joe Biden is, but he knows he can't pass it. It's dead on arrival. And it's not even dead on arrival because of the Republicans. It's dead on arrival because of some Democrats come from some non-liberal districts. And they're like, hey, I don't want to touch that. That's a hot potato. You know, a federal limitation to abortion. Yeah, I don't even want to go there. So they can't. Everybody wants it to be a state rights. Trump was right. Everybody wants it. Even Ginsburg said, that Roe versus Wade had some serious constitutional issues. So it's not something that the Republicans should be running from. And I thought Trump last night made Biden look like the radical in the subject. You know, Biden, you know, he should have stepped up when Trump was saying, hey, they're talking about abortions after birth. That's not abortion. That's euthanasia. Now, that's something totally different. It's murder. And so he kind of pushed Biden on this, and Biden wouldn't deal with it. He wouldn't address it because he knows the problem with Biden and the Democrats is, you know, the Republicans, you have moderate Republicans and then conservative Republicans in this whole rhino business. But Biden's got a worse scenario. He's got some pretty radical liberal in there and some moderate liberals. So he can't really go through all this stuff and address it, say, hey, I want a ban at, you know, so many weeks or whatever. He should do that because most of America embraces that. So he should have dealt with it. So I think he made Biden look like the radical on abortion. And I hope that he continues to address it that way, saying, look, I'm not saying anything about banning abortions. Not even, it's not my business. State rights issue, I'm out. Then they moved on to border and immigration. Holy crap. Biden looks stupid. And through the whole process, you know, CNN had that split screen, and I'm laughing my ass off. That split screen was hilarious because Trump is just like going at it. And Biden looks like somebody hit him with a baseball bat. I mean, he's just stunned looking over, you know, at Trump. But, you know, he looked terrible, you know. And I'm thinking, look, Biden doesn't even have to say a word. You can't vote for him. The person who really gained votes last night was RFK, because you're going to have a whole group of people say, I can't vote for Biden. Jeez, there's no way. We might as well just all dump our votes on RFK and call it good. But I thought it was awesome. I thought it was awesome that Biden took no responsibility for the border. None. Zip, zero, nada. You know, and again, how could you support someone that just opened our borders like that to all these killers and rapists and everything? And Trump just beat the crap out of them on that subject matter. Like, you know, you're letting these people in and they're killing our people, our women and our children. And you're the one who's let them in, these terrorists. And he's like, well, I don't think we've ever slated any as terrorists. You're looking stupid because you know that you've let terrorists in, but you just can't admit it. And I love when Trump said, I don't know what he just said, because I have to tell you, I didn't know what he just said. And then when he turned and goes, I don't think he knows what he said either. That was hilarious. That was awesome. And then when he said, you know,
Mark,
you're kidding.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is so fascinating. I'm just curious. They did this split screen knowing how Biden was looking. Did they intentionally set Biden up to start the talk of replacing him so that all Democrats around the country could see, you know, he needs to be replaced? Because they've been feeding, you know, that press secretary to Biden has been feeding the public these fake video, deep fake videos. She said, he's fine. These are just deep fake videos of, you know, him meandering off. And so they've been pushing that narrative, and they know the condition he's in. So they've been so hypocritical in that. But I mean, so are they, you know, giving up, walking back their hypocrisy and saying, yeah, folks, this is the way he really looks? Because, you know, it was just so obvious they weren't doing everything they could to help him. Well, they probably were doing everything they could to help him look better. But the split screen, like you said, showed the picture. And then, you know, my next question is, do you think Biden realized he was walking into a setup to where the world would now know, especially the Democrats who are in a different information silo, they would now know that, you know, he is, you know, senile and, you know, decrepit and not, you know, fit to serve. And yeah, I just want your take on that, because that's what was so interesting to me, and that they had to do it points out the hypocrisy. They knew what condition he was in, but they're acting shocked, you know, all of a sudden.
What about the date? This is the first debate before a convention ever, is my understanding. So why did they push? Because you know, Biden's not making any decisions. His handlers, his puppet masters are calling all the shots. So they convinced him or whatever, or they probably didn't even have to convince him. Let's have one early. Why was this to Biden's? They were saying, oh, so you could forget it. They were doing it before the convention because they wanted all of America to see him as he truly was. Exactly. CNN does the split screen. I thought, what is it? Tapper? Is that his name? He saved Biden when Biden was just like fumbling to hell or whatever. And he said, thank you, President Biden, Mr. Trump.
When Biden said, we beat Medicaid, or thank you.
I think it was a complete setup. I think the whole thing is a setup. Now, and you're kind of getting to this end game, which is great because I'm kind of running into the timeline here. So much to talk about. I love this. Is the people in power, and I learned this on a very minor scale when I was on the school board. When you get into power, I don't want to say that you don't want to give it up. I was very thrilled to get off the school board. But when you start getting into some of these power positions, that's why you have lifelong politicians. They love the power. They crave it. But it's not so much Biden. I think, this is just my opinion, you tell me what you think. I think it's all the bureaucrats behind Biden that don't want to leave power. So they don't care if he dies in office or whatever. If they can get to the second term and Kamala Harris takes over as president, they probably still have a job for another 4 years. I think it's self-preservation for these people. What do you think? Uh-oh, did I lose you? Yeah, no worries. But that's what I believe, is that they want to stay in power. And their guy, their horse, is Joe Biden, who can't do anything, but it doesn't matter. They want to stay in power. And so that's what this whole thing is about. And the others want to kind of get into power. So they're Democrats, but they got to get rid of Biden so they can get into power. And they realize Biden's not going to win. So what should happen is, if they were smart, they would go to like his chief of staff and say, look, there's a place for you. If we replace Biden, there's a place for you. And there's a whole group of these people that need to all be told, there's a place for you in this new administration. But who are they going to pick? You know, Newsom's kind of played out. I mean, but I think it's going to play. And this is one of the things that I think is so hilarious. Back in 68, convention in Chicago, their guy wouldn't run again. So they had to do it at the convention, and there's all this craziness going on at the convention, a lot of protesting. I think all the things that happened in 1968 are going to come about again in 24. I think they're going to go to Chicago. I think there's going to be riots in Chicago, or serious amounts of protesting. I think there's going to be a huge push at the convention to force Joe Biden out, which I'm not sure how that works. But I guarantee you they're looking up every bylaw they can to see if there's any way to get Biden out. They're going to be playing this. You know, they're pumping Biden with so many drugs to keep him alive. Maybe those drugs will turn into placebos or something. I don't know. But I think something's going to happen. I'm just convinced of it, that Biden is not going to be the guy who runs for the Democrats. I don't think it's going to be Kamala Harris. I've heard the rumors of getting rid of Kamala because they can do this now. I think they could whack, not whack. That sounds bad. I think Kamala could be replaced, I think. And I've heard the talk about putting Hillary Clinton in there. So people feel comfortable that when Biden dies, notice I didn't say if, that Hillary could take over as president. Everybody's happy, blah, 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 blah. I don't know if there's anything behind this. It's all talk, but everybody's throwing them under the bus today. It's hilarious. All these people that a week ago were talking about, you know, oh, Biden's our guy, blah, 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 blah. They're done with him. They're done. They threw him so far under the bus, he slid out the other side. I mean, it's just hilarious because bottom line is Trump just pummeled Biden last night on so many things. I thought one of his best lines kind of summed this up a little bit. I thought it was awesome when he called Biden a Palestinian. I can't even say it right. Palestinian, whatever. Because Joe can't run from that. You know, he tried to talk about the fact, you know, oh, we support Israel, blah, blah. I just wouldn't give him the 3,000 pounders or whatever. And Trump was just like, you know what? Let Israel finish it. Let Israel secure their borders, just like we would love to. Israel's been getting their ass kicked for years from these terrorists. They've had enough. At some point, they have to just say, enough is enough. And if the Jewish people have not gone through enough over the millennium or whatever, you know, they need to be able to protect themselves. I have to tell you, if I was an Israeli or if I lived in Israel, I would want Hamas devastated. I would want them gone. This is interesting. The leader of Hamas is still alive. To me, it's not over until their Osama bin Laden is gone. And if they're not going to give up the hostages, you know, you can't cut deals with terrorists. And Biden does it all the time with Iran. Iran had been pretty much dormant until that dumbass gave them billions of dollars to get them back in the game. Now they're sponsoring terrorists again. So isn't it interesting? I've said this for years, even back when I was on a school board, I've always said it takes many people to build. It only takes a few to destroy. And Biden has gone in there in just a few years and totally destroyed this country. All the things that Trump set up in his administration, getting rid of the regulations, which encourages small business to get in the game and create all these businesses, and everything was heading on the right direction. And Biden whacked it all to go towards socialism and shutting all this down. We were energy independent. We didn't need anybody. And we were selling stuff. And now Biden won't even let us sell gas to our allies in Europe. This is crazy, the stuff that he's done. So I think they have thrown Biden under the bus. He couldn't even finish up his 2 minutes in a debate. Even I know that when they give you 2 minutes, you pretty much want to use most of it up. I thought, again, Biden just pounded him, talking about how Trump pounded Biden. Social Security, something I'm very interested in, a few years away from starting to draw Social Security. Biden's killing it. You're letting all these people in and you're putting them on welfare and Social Security and all these government programs. That was designated for citizens. Once you tell someone, you know, come here and we'll take care of you. My goodness, if I lived in another country, I'd be hoofing it through the border too. I don't blame, you know, these people for trying to cross our borders. But the problem is, if you say, well, 80% of them are good people, holy crap, 20% are terrorists. You know, you got to vet them. You got to play the system right. And this is what I've always said. Everyone thinks that Republicans are anti-immigration. BS. I want people to come into this country legally. You need to sign the guest book. You need to come through the gates. You need to sign up. You need to do it in an orderly fashion in an amount that we can handle. And we got to know who you are, where you know where you're living. You got to get a job. You got to assimilate into our country and be a contributing member of our society. You commit a crime, you're gone. You're gone. I don't care. And you got to prove that you can be a good citizen. I agree so much with what Trump said last night. Why would you let in all these prisoners and people from mental institutions from Venezuela and other countries? I mean, Cuba did the same thing to us years ago. Why would you accept these people? I mean, this is crazy. This isn't, you know, they always say that this isn't a Republican or Democrat issue. It's not. This is about being stupid. And Biden is stupid. And he's done a lot of stupid things. And even if you don't like Trump, who cares? You got to vote for Trump so you can get our country back on the right path get back into getting rid of these regulations and stuff. Worst statement made by Biden, as far as I'm concerned, the biggest lie that Joe Biden said last night during this debate was Trump devastated the middle class. You might even miss the statement because it kind of snuck in there. Trump devastated the middle class? That's just definitely not true. Trump was probably the best friend to the middle class, and he was probably the best friend to minorities and all kinds of different groups. Again, when Trump makes a promise, he does it. When Biden makes a promise, nothing happens. What has he done for the Black community or the Hispanic community since he's been in office? Goose egg. Trump actually helped. And so I thought that was the biggest lie of the whole night. Trump has been phenomenal for the middle class. The golf handicap thing, found it funny, pretty stupid. I really didn't like the fact that both of them just said that the other sucked. You know, who sucked more? You know, who was the worst president? I mean, that's a waste of time. No one really focused on what policies or what changes. I think Trump made a great thing when he said, I'm going to go back to what I did before. I'm going to get rid of all this stupid stuff that Biden's done in the last 3.5 years. And I'm going to go back in the direction we're going to become energy independent, massive deportations, get rid of all these regulations and drill, baby, drill. And we're going to stimulate the economy and everything like that. And you know what? I believe Trump. I believe him completely. When he says he's going to do something, he does it. You know, that's the one thing you have to give to him. And all this other stuff is just garbage. And all Biden said last night was, it's all Trump's fault. I inherited this bad economy, this bad country, bad everything. You can't expect me to do everything. I need a second term, you know. So that was just whining on his part. So, that's kind of how everything went last night. Again, everybody's throwing Biden under the bus. I think this is going to be the most entertaining summer possible. I'm concerned when Russia and China come to the realization that Trump's probably going to win, then they could be pushed up against a wall from a standpoint of, we got to do this before Trump gets into office. So I am very concerned that what will Putin do when he comes to the conclusion that Trump's coming back, and what will China do? You know, China wants Taiwan back. And I've always said that there's a little resort island that is to the southwest of Taiwan. And it's controlled by Taiwan, but it's closer to mainland. It's more in the direction of mainland China. I think before China invades Taiwan, they'll take that island first just to see what happens and see what Biden will do. So I am concerned that when they know, this is like when Reagan took over, Iran released all the hostages. So that would be a good thing, you know, if they say, oh, Trump's going to win, we better, you know, get everything back. But I hope they don't try to go back to a standpoint of, we better hurry up and get everything we want to get done before Biden's out of office. But enjoy the summer, or the rest of the summer. We're in the summer now. It's going to be entertaining. I think the Republican convention is going to be entertaining. I think the Democrat convention is going to be hilarious. Can't wait to watch it and see what all happens in Chicago this year. But bottom line is, last night sealed the fate of Joe Biden. He is done. And it'll be interesting to watch everybody trying to get off the Titanic and see how that works out. So everybody have a great weekend. Remember the Chuck and Julie show on Monday. Hopefully it'll be a lot more entertaining with Chuck and Julie. I love watching them. I'm sure they're going to have a heyday with all the stuff that's going on. So have a great weekend. See everybody later.